welcome to Warbirds in Review. I'm Dan Bolden. Today's subject is the B-29. Now, we couldn't get the B-29 in here. Obviously, it's too big. And also, the only B-29 in the world is up at Appleton flying overhead. So maybe it'll come over as we start the program. But I'd like to introduce my honored guest today. He is Theodore Dutch Van Kirk. Dutch joined the Aviation Cadet Program April the 1st, 1942. He received his commission and wings as a navigator and joined the first operational B-17 group in the 8th Air Force in England. That was the 97th Bomb Group, a very famous outfit in history. Dutch flew on the Red Gremlin, was the name of his airplane. He crewed with another aircraft commander named Paul Tibbets. You ever heard that name? And also he had a bombardier named Tom Farabee. And Mary Ann Farabee is with us today. Mary Ann, welcome. The Red Gremlin flew many notable missions, and we're going to talk with Dutch about that today, but he's got some great stories. We could talk all day probably, but we have a limited amount of time. He, of course, was the navigator on Enola Gay, and we know that story, and he's going to tell us that one too. May I present Major Dutch Van Kirk. Dutch, you've been here many times. What does EAA in Oshkosh mean to you?
It means a lot of people. It means traffic jams. And it means a way of getting our young people into the air, and that's important. That's the end of my statement.
It does. Let's talk about the 8th Air Force, the largest military unit in history. And I think, if my numbers are correct, about 250,000 members. They lost 80,000 casualties. That's killed, missing in action, or POWs. That's a tremendous sacrifice. When you think about being 18, 19, 20 years old and going into combat and knowing that you have a 1 out of 3 chance of coming home, and yet you go fly every day, that's incredible. That's incredible. Talk about that, Dutch, the early days of 8th Air Force.
Well, in the early days of the 8th Air Force, it was on-the-job training. I can remember the first mission I ever flew. They said, you're going to go in at 22,000 feet. I had never before been above 10,000 feet. And I get up there and I look down at the ground, and everything looks different. I says, God, I hope I'm doing this right, and everything else. But we learned for the first 3 or 4 missions. And after that, we were veterans then. We were all veterans, and we had the swagger and everything, whether we were earned it or not.
The 8th sometimes would have 1,000 bombers and maybe 600 or 700 fighters in the air at one time. The logistics involved is just unbelievable. Just think of the fuel. How much fuel was that for 1,000 bombers and 600 or 700 fighters? But you guys flew every day knowing that you had, a 1 to 3 chance of making it home, and yet you had to fly 25 missions to go home. You're a dead man.
If you were in England, it was 25 missions. If you moved down to North Africa, it was 50 missions. Every place I went, it got a little bit higher.
I know you had some pretty close calls. Can you tell us a story about Paul Tibbets having to intervene on one of the crew members?
I guess the first one was when we were flying with a colonel one day, Colonel Longfellow. I'll never forget that name. And Colonel Longfellow had the distinction of having a B-25. And we would take off on our B-17s. We were slower. He would get in his B-25 and beat us to our landing site. And he was chewing at us before we took off. And he'd be there chewing at us the day we landed. I can always remember we landed one time in St. Louis, and one of our fellows took the airplane off the runway and got it stuck. Colonel Longfellow tore up to him and says, "What happened here? What happened here?" And the fellow was a little bit fed up with him. He looked at Colonel Longfellow and says, "Well, we ran off the runway and got the airplane stuck. Any stupid jerk can see that." But Longfellow, after we got to England, Longfellow decided he wanted to fly one of our missions with us. Well, he was flying as third pilot on the plane. Back in those days, The German's modus operandi was get out in front of us, fly right at us, make a turn as we did, and break down and get away from us that way. That was their fast getaway method. And that one guy did that. And incidentally, her husband and I, Tom Ferby and I, shot more ammunition at enemy airplanes without hitting anything. I don't think I ever damaged. The safest place for a German pilot was flying against us. And that day, the German was hit by somebody, and came through the formation, and he shot up our co-pilot. Fortunately, missed a Navigator and Bombardier, and the co-pilot was bleeding. Tibbetts was trying to bandage the co-pilot and everything else, and Newt Longfellow proceeded to grab a bunch of throttles and do something with them. I don't know what he was going to do with them. Tibbetts, to his credit, didn't hesitate a minute. He just, bang, just like that, knocked little Newt Longfellow flat on his butt out there, stretched out on a thing and this sort of thing. And when he came to, he told Paul, you did exactly the right thing. Paul, I think it relieved Paul a lot.
You know, all the crew members on a B-17 were qualified gunners. I bet you didn't know that, did you? The Navigator and the Bombardier were qualified gunners. The only two people on the airplane that wasn't a qualified gunner was the pilot and co-pilot. But there was a lot.
I wouldn't say qualified, by the way.
Well, if you didn't hit anything, I guess you weren't. Anyway, let's talk some more about some of the most famous missions you went on with the B-17.
Well, I guess the most famous one of the ones that started. When two officers appeared at our camp one day, and we didn't know what for, and they wanted a Tibbetts' crew and this sort of thing, so they wanted to go down to Gibraltar. We didn't know why he wanted to go down to Gibraltar, but we'd go out at west of England, and that was another lesson in navigation. We could not fly over 400 feet because the Germans had patrol planes out over there. Bay of Biscay. So we were flying, we took off and we dropped down to 400 feet, and there we were tooling our way, I hope, to Gibraltar and that sort of thing. This was one of, and by the way, you couldn't miss it either. If you took one look at Mark Clark, you knew who it was. Mark Clark had a very distinguished appearance and acted at all times. So after we get down to Gibraltar, why, Clark breaks open some small boxes we had taken down there and was passing out some coins. We each got two gold coins. How about that now? How would you feel if somebody walked up and gave you two gold coins this morning? I don't know where mine went. I lost them in a crap game. I threw your bike, by the way, something like that. Probably to her husband, but that's okay. Then we came back. And when we came back was the first problem, indication I had that I had a problem. Because coming back, we threw through the worst weather in the world. And finally, we break out over clouds, and I see some islands down there. Paul Tibbetts calls me and says, Dutch, do you know where you're at? I says, hell no. And he says, you think you know where you're at? I says, yeah, if my guess is right, I think I know where I'm at. But to make a long story short, we make a heading to about 70 degrees to go into our heading. And suddenly the radio operator comes on. And you must remember now, the RAF didn't have too many good navigators. But they had systems built up. And one of them was a system of QDMs. You contacted a radio station, and the radio station told you what direction to fly to go to your base. That was smart, wasn't it? But the radio operator called up and says, Navigator, I got a QDM. I says, good, Orval, what is it? His name was Orval Spitt, by the way. I says, good, Orval, what is it? It was 180 degrees to where I was flying. And if he's right and I'm wrong, I'm flying into Germany. if he's right, if he's wrong, and I'm right, we're going to end up down the Atlantic without gas. Two good choices, aren't they? That sort of thing. But I got that straightened out. I insisted that I was right, and I went in and landed. And two RAF officers met me when we landed and apologized for giving me a wrong cue to him. I says, you know, you have a great system. What if I'd have been out there in the Atlantic swimming with the sharks right now? And that sort of thing. But then a few days later, we took six guys from our group. We all went down to Hearn, England. Hearn was one of small airport on the south coast of England. And we were just told to wait. Our cargo would be delivered to us. Come the day we were supposed to take off, and our cargo was delivered. General Eisenhower and his staff to command the North African invasion. Get Eisenhower out to the base. Wingtips, we couldn't even see them. I couldn't even see that fence post, the end of the fence out there. So we were debating about whether to take off with a cargo like Eisenhower and everything else. And I can remember the Eisenhower discussion we had. And we were there talking about, should I take off? If I had every minute I waited around airports and could take off, I'd be a rich man, that's all I can say. But Eisenhower was there, and he finally made up. Tibbets looked at him and says, I don't know whether we should take off or not. Eisenhower says to him, son, I have a war to fight down there. And if I'm not there, they're not going to fight it. I need to get there. And Tibbets says, well, if you need to get there, we're going to take off. And I can always remember looking out there at about 60 degrees and seeing a church steeple and seeing myself wrapped around the church steeple. It wasn't a pretty sight. But to make a long story short, we took off on radio compass heading, and we all got off the ground. All six of our airplanes got off the ground. Now you're going to wonder what happened to those six airplanes. I'm going to tell you. One airplane, which caught on fire and went into the Bay of Biscay. General Duncan was on board that airplane. He was to command the 12th Air Force when they get down there. Doolittle got an instant of emotion that day. He liked that. Another one of our airplanes had brake problems. So he decided to turn around and go back to England and get them fixed. And what he did, he encountered a German patrol plane. The large patrol plane is down there. How do you fight a German? That must have been interesting. A B-17 fighting a German patrol plane out over the Bay of Biscay. And this sort of thing. The co-pilot was shot up. That's something with the bullet committee saying this sort of thing. They had another passenger on board, which took over. Guess who it was? General Jimmy Doolittle. Not a bad selection for co-pilot when you're going to make one.